Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you all, wherever you're listening to us from, and welcome to DW's Africa Link program this Thursday, the 24th December. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Ethiopia's opposition party, the Oromo Federal Congress, vows to continue protests against government plans to extend the capital, Addis Ababa.
We continue to support the cause of our people. We continue our peaceful struggle. We cannot be intimidated as the government has done.
El Nino rains continue to wreak havoc in parts of Kenya and Somalia. Scores have been killed and many more displaced.
Nearly 100 people have been killed this year in Kenya as a result of flooding. Around 2 million people remain at risk. That's a lower figure than we were predicting in September.
Also on the program, another chance to hear a segment of our ongoing Learning by Ear series, Crime Fighters. Stay tuned.
Top story.
We begin the program in Ethiopia, where the Oromo people have vowed to continue their protests against a government plan to expand the capital Addis Ababa into Oromia territory, despite a crackdown by security forces that left scores dead. Under Ethiopia's constitution, all land belongs to the state, with owners legally considered tenants. This raises fears among the Oromos, Ethiopia's largest ethnic group, that a wave of dispossession is on its way. DW's Melga Bula from the Amharic Service has been following events closely in Addis Ababa. He told me how important land was for the Oromo people.
I would say for a population of now about 100 million, and for a population that depends on about more than 80% of population depends on agriculture, so land is at the heart of their livelihood. It's where they get their production, their crops. It is where they keep their cattle. And also, not only that, but also culturally. Land is not only something that you produce on. It is an inheritance. It is something that you pass on to your children.
When the government says it is expanding the capital Addis Ababa, why should that be seen a necessary development?
Well, I would say those who are protesting now didn't exclude the good news of development. Everybody accepts or welcomes development. But I think the current protest has more to do with historical and the political system of the country. If I would like to take you back a little bit, the constitution of the country, like Article 49, specifically states that the Oromia region has special interest in the capital city of Addis Ababa, which belongs to also the Oromo. Both the federal government and the regional government use it as a capital city. This special interest includes sharing revenues that comes out from Addis Ababa, also having the right to natural resource in the area and sharing it with federal government. So the Oromo people are complaining these special interests are not fulfilled. Now taking with the name of development all those cities and districts would not give guarantee for people to have their special interest on the cities. For example, for the Oromo people to have their economic and social rights, which is placed in the constitution. The land in the constitution doesn't belong only to government. Article 40 of the constitution says the land belongs to the government and the people.
How concerned are you that there could be more bloodshed in Ethiopia if this is not solved amicably between the two sides?
I would say if the government still delay sitting with the public and debating over this plan, what is the benefit? It will lead again to more bloodshed.
I was speaking to DW's Melga Bula. Meanwhile, violence and chaos gripped Ethiopia this week as thousands of demonstrators took to the streets to protest government plans of extending the capital Addis Ababa, as we just mentioned. Human Rights Watch says at least 75 people were killed in a bloody crackdown. The Oromo Federal Congress puts the death toll at more than 80 people, while the government says only 5 persons were killed. For more on the protests, I spoke to Merara Gudina, chairman of the opposition Oromo Federal Congress, but because of the poor quality line, we voiced over the interview.
The Addis Ababa master plan is part of a larger land grab by the Ethiopian government around Addis Ababa. which has displaced not less than 200,000 people. Secondly, under federalism, all the boundaries are being eroded by the ruling party, which is bent on taking the land. People are very angry with the government, and people who wanted to see change are frustrated.
Under Ethiopia's constitution, all land belongs to the state, with owners legally considered tenants. Don't you think this allows the government to carry out any developments that may serve the interests of all Ethiopians?
No, the government is misusing it. The constitution says the land belongs to the public, so it doesn't allow the government to simply tell the people to go away and take the land. No, it says there are bonds of state in the name of the people, and there are individuals owning the land. It is the ruling party that is misusing the constitution. In fact, the state itself is privatizing the country.
We understand you have vowed to continue the demonstrations despite the killings, and Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn declared on television that the government would act without mercy. Isn't it better to perhaps solve these issues through talks?
We continue to support the cause of our people.
We continue to support the cause of our people. We continue our peaceful struggle. We cannot be intimidated as the government has done. We have popular support. We have millions of people behind us. The government cannot silence us easily. We are following the constitution, but we are against the arbitrary misuse of the constitution by the ruling party. Our people will continue.
Is it true that your organization is getting any support from outsiders?
The government is simply accusing left.
The diaspora is far away. It's school kids, high schools, and universities, and the government is simply accusing the left and the right. Probably the diaspora is very active in the media because the local media are totally controlled by the government. We have no access to the media, and the diaspora have some media outlets and they report what is happening in our country. But a diaspora of a few thousand cannot move millions of people.
Mira Gudina, chairman of the opposition Oromo Federal Congress.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Over 100 people have so far died in Kenya due to the El Nino rains that have been pounding the East African region. This is according to the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA. On Wednesday, OCHA released a report in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, showing that more than 18 million people in the Greater Horn of Africa region are facing a crisis and are in dire need of food aid. Andrew Asike brings us this report from Nairobi.
In Kenya, more than 100 people have so far died. In the Greater Horn of Africa, over 18 million have been left without food. This is the effect of El Nino rains that hit the region from last October to date. The UN has appealed to international donors to bring forward the 2016 humanitarian funding to support and complement government's efforts to combat the challenge. In the meantime, the World Food Programme is responding to the most affected and very vulnerable. The World Food Programme spokesperson, Charlize McDonough, explains their efforts so far.
So it's a multi-pronged approach where we're looking at both the immediate food needs of families who are in crisis because of drought and specifically targeted nutrition support to people. Because basically the effects of undernutrition can be lifelong. So if a child doesn't get the right nutrients in the first 2 years of his or her life, then that's going to affect their ability to perform well in school and to earn a living later on.
Ethiopia and Sudan are the most affected countries, with 10.2 million and 3.6 million people respectively facing hunger. Dr. Guliad Atan, IGAD Climate Prediction Director, says that the irregular rain patterns have made the situation worse.
Within our region, the northern sector, that's Sudan, South Sudan, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Djibouti, northern Somalia, we see below average rainfall. And that's what has happened this year, where in the equatorial sector, the rainfall is above average.
Pete Manfield, head of the United Nations OCHA Regional Office for East Africa, say that excessive rains in Somalia, Ethiopia, Uganda and Kenya have increased the risk of flooding, with over 2 million people being at risk.
Nearly 100 people have been killed this year in Kenya as a result of flooding. Around 2 million people remain at risk. That's a lower figure than we were predicting in September, as the rains have not come at the scale to impact the worst case. Around 300,000 are currently displaced, 70,000 in Kenya, 60,000 in Somalia, and the rest dispersed throughout the rest of the region.
The UN and IGAD added that resource gaps to respond to the identified humanitarian needs remain of grave concern. They noted that gaps still remain in provision of safe drinking water, drugs, hygiene, and emergency health kits.
Andrew Asike reporting from Nairobi. Now, children in Cameroon will be celebrating Christmas and New Year without toy guns after the government banned the importation of all toys which resemble weapons. The move is intended to prevent children from playing war games amongst themselves, which could turn them violent in the future. As DW's Mokinzeka reports, Cameroon is one of the countries that have been hit hard by the Boko Haram insurgency. Therefore, the government thinks that by banning toy guns, it is also protecting children from being radicalized.
9-year-old Kennedy Afubai uses his electronic Kalashnikov toy gun to shoot at objects at St. Anastasie, a popular park and tourist attraction in the heart of Yaoundé, Cameroon's political capital. The toy gun sprays little water-filled balloons when Kennedy pulls its trigger.
As you can see, I'm using my Kalashnikov gun to shoot and kill enemies so they should not continue attacking us. I'll kill all of them.
Barely 500 meters from the park is a toy gun shop. Its owner, Yannick Fou, had just sold the 30th of such guns when I visited.
People still come and ask for toy gun, but the number is not as huge as before.
At Yannick's shop, I met Tangwa Joseph, a father of three, who refused to buy a toy gun as Christmas gift for his 7-year-old son.
When children get used to toy guns, and toy guns have the same shape with the real guns, sometimes they can get in contact to a real gun and they will misuse it and cause harm.
The government of Cameroon is prohibiting the importation, sale and use of such replica handguns alongside toy blasters to improve public safety. Cameroon's National Commission on Human Rights and Freedoms has congratulated the government for the ban, but is asking for additional efforts in making sure it is effective. Galim Eugene of the commission says their main concern is that there has been proliferation of weapons and little arms throughout Central Africa, and traffickers may pretend they are selling toy guns and instead supply weapons.
You hear countries that are at war on a daily basis. It's a whole issue because after war, what happens? Most of those weapons, they end up in hands that are not supposed to be in possession of these arms.
Sociologist Annie Dorian says it is imperative to enact anti-imitation firearm laws.
Toys should conform to security norms because dangerous toys do exist. We must avoid toys that seem to encourage violence, and we should consider ethics in our choice of toys. The choice should reflect the standards we set for our kids and should first of all consider security norms.
Most of the toys are brought into Cameroon through neighboring Nigeria. Cameroon and Nigeria have been fighting the Boko Haram insurgency and struggling to limit the circulation of firearms.
Moki Kinzeka in Yaoundé. It's now time to enjoy another segment of Crime Fighters, a learning by ear production.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Welcome to Crime Fighters, The Radical Journey. It's the last episode in the series. And in Kululaland, the police are closing in on the truth about the death of Zora Kasim. After weeks of trying to find out who helped her carry out the suicide bomb attack, Cadet Inspector Jude has just learned that Zora was in love with the warlord Skambo. Inspectors Brenda and Jude don't know this yet, but the commissioner has been conducting his own inquiries with the help from a very unlikely ally. What has he found out? All will be revealed in this final episode, entitled With a Heavy Heart.
So, Jude, Brenda, it's time to tell you what I've managed to find out about Honorable Kasim.
Yes, Mr. Commissioner, sir. We're listening.
I planted a mole in his office. By listening in on several of his conversations, we've discovered that he siphoned off the 100 billion that was set aside for the Takoka Dam project. That was supposed to improve the water supply for the entire region.
He stole the lot?
Yep. This dam was also an essential part of phase 2 of the irrigation farming project for small-scale farmers.
But where did all the money go?
We haven't been able to trace much of it, but we can confirm he bought some properties abroad.
How did he intend to cover it up? Someone was bound to find out.
Not necessarily. Not if you create other problems to distract both public opinion and your fellow politicians. Hence, the current insecurity.
What do you mean?
You see, when there is unrest and terrorist attacks, like those carried out by Skambo and his people, money gets redirected into boosting security. That's where Kasim comes in. He's the Commissioner of Finance, remember? But that's not all. He also deals in small arms.
This is insane. So even if Honorable Kasim didn't kill his daughter with his own bare hands, it means he's part of the system that killed her.
Well, we have enough proof now to arrest Honorable Kasim. So I suggest we arrange to visit him at home this afternoon.
Sir, you know I said I was onto something? If you're going to Honorable Kasim's house, I'd like to take someone with us.
Take someone? Jude, what are you talking about?
Sir, I promise it'll help our case. Let me explain.
All right, I'm listening.
Commissioner, I didn't realize you'd be bringing a delegation with you today.
You are all welcome in our home, of course.
Honorable Kasim, Mrs. Kasim, thank you for receiving us. You remember my team, Inspectors Brenda.
Good afternoon.
And Jude.
Hello.
And this is Cecilia.
Hello.
Welcome to you all.
Before we get to the main purpose of our visit, Cecilia here has something she'd like to say to you.
Mr. and Mrs. Kasim, I came to tell you the whole story and to make amends. I knew Zora. I used to be with the warlord Skambo and I met your daughter through him.
What?
The warlord? What do you mean you met Zora through him? They knew each other? How did they meet?
Online, through the Friends Connect website. They struck up a friendship and then they fell in love.
In love?
Zora was such a compassionate person. When Skambo told her about all his ideas and plans, she offered to do the bombing herself because of the love she had for him. He'd convinced her that it was the right thing to do.
Do you realize what you're saying?
I still remember her soft voice when we met at the mall. We hid in the toilets and I helped her put on the bomb belt. It was almost noon. The stream is here on the right. All I have to do is pull, and it will be over.
Zora, I really admire you, but are you sure you want to do this?
Why are you crying? What must be done must be done. It's for the good of us all, that we may leave this world a better place.
You seem to have made up your mind. Nothing I say is going to change it.
No. What must be done must be done.
I've never seen anyone so brave.
It's okay, Cecilia. It will be over soon.
I'm so sorry. I should have tried harder. I'm sorry I didn't stop her.
Get this woman away from me. I don't want to see her here. What kind of a human being are you? You disgust. disgusting lately.
With Cecilia's help, the police have been able to locate Scambo the warlord. A team is on its way to arrest him as we speak. But I'm afraid we are going to have to take you with us too, Honorable Kasim. I'm arresting you on charges of embezzling public funds and aiding and abetting terrorists.
You can't be serious. There must be some mistake.
No mistake. Your wife hired a private investigator to follow you. Thanks to her, we have all information we need and more.
Lado? You didn't. This can't be happening.
You're only getting what you deserve, Kasim.
Inspector Jude, handcuff him, please.
Right away, sir.
We'll take him to the police station. Mr. Kasim can tell us everything he knows about the network, including a certain Maga. This investigation is far from over.
Jude, huh? It's you.
Hello, Bobo. I'm sorry I haven't visited you here in prison for so long.
Yeah, it's been a while. Last time you came was, what? Almost 2 months ago? I was really angry with you for lying about being a cop.
I know, Bobo, but everything I did was to try and protect you.
Yeah, I realize that now. It's okay.
Anyway, I came to tell you that things are much better for your family now. Your mother has a new job in the police station canteen. She's able to pay the rent. And a little brother is back on his feet.
That's good to hear. Listen, Jude, I've had a lot of time to think here in prison. I tried to join the SWAT Sages because I couldn't get a job and I was desperate to get money for my family. But that can't be the only way.
Of course not.
So, I've been thinking, I can't let other people fall into the same trap, being manipulated by a terror group. They pretend to help you, but they're just using you. I want to try and help put a stop to it. It's even going on right here, in prison.
What are you thinking of?
Creating a group. A movement against radicalization in prison. We need to have discussions about other ways of dealing with things, finding other solutions. I've already talked about it with the supervisor. In fact, we're about to start the project.
Bobo, that's great. Maybe I could suggest to Cecilia that she does the same in the women's prison. And you know, there are good things happening on the outside now as well, in the youth hangouts like Ziggy's.
Oh, yeah?
Lado Kasim and Zora's best friend Patricia have been meeting a lot lately. They've been thinking about how to prevent other young people going down the same path as Zora. So they founded an NGO to tackle these problems at their source.
Ah, really?
Yeah, it's called Kulula Youth. And the members have been talking to the youngsters about their microfinancing program.
Mm-hmm.
Now they regularly give advice on how to start a small business.
Nice.
The NGO has also launched a community radio working with young people. They report about issues in the region, social problems, whatever affects them. And they are doing really well.
Sounds cool.
It is. I'm sure they'd be interested in reporting on your movement in the prison. One of their goals is to raise awareness about terrorist groups and their recruitment methods.
Well, I can certainly tell them a thing or two about that.
And that's how our story ends. Incredible as it seems, Zora's motive for becoming a suicide bomber was love, and the belief that only violence could bring about real change in society. Crime Fighters, The Radical Journey was written by Pinado Abdu Waba with a special contribution by the Nigerian author Helen Habila. If you want to listen to any of the episodes again, please visit our website, dw.com/crimefighters. You can also share your comments on this story on our Facebook page. Thanks for listening and goodbye.
Now a reminder of some of the stories that we've covered for you. Ethiopia's opposition party, the Oromo Federal Congress, has vowed to continue protests against the government plans to extend the capital Addis Ababa. At least 100 people have been killed and millions in dire need of food aid because of El Nino rains in the East African region. For more stories and videos, please visit our website, dw.com/Africa. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, Germany.